Because that's also part of the process of, you know, using your own voice and ideas to maybe suggest something that maybe the team didn't think about, or it could add more to the story, especially when you're like working on animations that are very story driven with characters and scenery and things like that. I find really important to take that rough thumbnail and then trying to make it into something that you can add a bit of your voice to, but be curious with the team and the style, direction, things like that.
Welcome to the Style Frame Saturdays podcast, the podcast dedicated to ideation, visual storytelling, and concept development as it pertains to an animated production. We'll be breaking down the brief of our guests' favorite style frames, and we'll also get a glimpse into the inspiration and workflows behind their frame of choice as well. You just heard from Nuria Bogue, an illustrator, animator, and director based in Scotland in the United Kingdom. She's got quite the knack for vibrant and playful compositions, and her attention to detail in both her creative process and final results are incredible. She's here to break down one of her favorite illustrative pieces today, which I am so excited about, so let's get to it. Hey, Nuria, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. I know we've been chatting offline for a little while now to get you on, so I'm finally happy to, you know, have you here today and take some time to, you know, be a guest on the show. How's everything going?
Hi, so thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. Everything's going very well. Thank you. How are you?
Doing good. Can't complain. You know, we're kind of, I can't believe it. You know, we're finally getting into like last quarter of the year, which is, you know, it always blows my mind how quickly we get from January to like, you know, this time of year. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's fun. I'm glad to be, you know, recording with you today. You know, we're getting ready to wrap up the second season here. And, so happy to have you part of this roster. So, you know, again, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Well, I know you've been on some other industry podcasts, like the School of Motion podcast before. So our audience may be familiar with you and your work, but in the off chance that they're not, you know, to kick things off, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into illustration in the field of motion design?
Right. So yeah, let me wind back and make some memory. Right. So I'm Nuria and I'm an illustrator and motion designer as well. I'm based in Scotland, but I was born in Spain. And I've been in the world of freelance and running my own business for roughly 5 years now, which kind of feels like yesterday, but it's been a while. And then prior to that, I was a junior motion designer for almost 3 years, so 2 years and a half or so. And prior to that first experience in the industry, I graduated in graphic design at Edinburgh Napier University. And yeah, now I work just as a full-time illustrator.
Oh, very cool. And so are you doing some of the motion design stuff too, or largely focusing on the illustration end of things?
So primarily I focus on the illustration side of things, which is what I think I enjoy the most. But I also like to do short looping GIFs with my illustrations for social media, sometimes for client work. And once I'm not doing either illustration or animation, I like to collaborate with motion design studios as well on the style frame design.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah, well, and I've seen some of the work that, you know, you've contributed to, like work with Ordinary Folk and those types of studios. So it's really cool to see that, you know, you're doing motion design stuff, but then also purely like illustrative stuff. But speaking of the more purely illustrative stuff, I know you've brought an illustrative piece with you here today. And I'd love to jump right into it if you don't mind. Tell us a little bit about this illustrative piece that you've selected to share?
Yes, so I selected this piece because I kind of felt quite a personal connection to it. As a starting point, it's my nephew who has been the most inspiring thing in this world. I have two nephews, so they've been a wonderful gift. And yeah, this illustration I really enjoyed because I like to draw things from childhood memories myself. And because I find that childhood is such a good source of inspiration, especially for personal work. And in this illustration, I wanted to portray that, the wonder of wandering and a whimsical kind of scenery. And the thing that came to mind when I was trying to create at the point in time when I was creating this illustration, I had a lot of intrinsic thoughts about how I wanted to do my work, what I wanted to do next. I really wanted to source my inspiration more within myself and the things around me, and also draw inspiration from ordinary things in life. So I just wanted to capture a moment in life that really treasured, that may not be that big of a deal, but to me it was pretty special. And it was just like the amazement of my nephew finding snails and wanting to pet them, play with them. And I just found it so funny because normally I wouldn't touch them. I would be like, I would leave them alone. But it was just so funny how he was not scared at all. He was just so playful and careful. And it was just like a lovely moment that I want to capture on the page. And I have I find a lot of inspiration also from Ghibli movies, where they also draw themes on their films that is kind of like childhood moments or characters that are growing up, but they come from, you know, being a child and developing into having to grow up to overcome certain difficulties and things like that. So it kind of all ties together to what I enjoy doing as a personal work and sort of what I wanted to portray in this artwork, which is kind of the curiosity aspect of childhood.
I love that. Well, and you know, it's so funny, you know, I was looking at this stuff yesterday as I was getting ready for, you know, for our chat today. And, you know, there's just such a vibrant sort of whimsical sort of tone to like your work and everything. But now that you're talking about it, you know, maybe in lack of a better word, you know, giving us the informal brief behind it, right? You know, you can totally see like the nostalgia and even the sort of the influence that you're talking about with, correct me if I misheard you, but did you say like Disney inspiration or just like pure like TV inspiration?
Mostly Ghibli and also Disney in a way. I mean, I grew up watching both. Although at the time I didn't know who Ghibli was. I just kind of enjoy their movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, this resonates with me. Actually, one of my favorites was Kiki's Delivery Service. And I think I kind of resonate a lot because she kind of grew up. She reached that age where she kind of went to a different city and eventually started her own business and, you know, kind of developed into adulthood, which is kind of, I guess, we all have done at some point.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, you know, now I'm seeing like inspiration outside of the frame itself now too, with your own sort of business and what you've been doing, you know, career-wise. So that's really cool. I mean, yeah, again, you can see it clear as day in this piece now that you're mentioning these elements. You know, I'm sort of like, oh yeah, I can totally see that in this piece, you know. And so it's really cool to like kind of see that that's where the inspiration was pulled from for this piece, you know, in terms of sort of like maybe some of these pop culture references. But also, you know, really at the end of the day, the brief, for lack of a better word, behind it and this loose concept was just capturing that curiosity of your nephew, which, you know, couldn't have been more beautifully done. I hope he's a big fan of this piece.
Yeah, I was like, who do you think this is? And I said, this is me. I was like, okay, oh, I did awesome. A good job. He recognized himself.
Best client ever.
Yeah, it was not much feedback. It was approved right at the spot.
Not too many rounds of revisions. It was great. Yeah. That's awesome. Just curious, though, you know, I know that this was a personal piece that you were working on. So, you know, timeline wise, you may not have been focused on that, but just curious, you know, how long did you give yourself to complete this piece?
It really depends. I think this piece maybe took me, I mean, it's not going to be a 100% accurate answer because sometimes I lose notion of time and for personal work, I didn't really keep track of how much time is spent, but I'm sure it was no less than 4 days together. Yeah, maybe on and off. It really depends. I like to start sketching on the iPad. So they're like, you can see some process videos of how sometimes it starts. And as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to find the references from ordinary things. And you can see the photos that I took as a reference, they are not necessarily great or very intentionally taken. I just wanted to capture it and remember it. But just so that it could be like a starting point of something I definitely wanted to incorporate into the artwork. And also, I have a reference. I took a reference photo from my nephew, which for obvious reasons I can share. But it was a great source of referencing for the pose of the character, especially because in the process video, you can see that I start in quite a flat view of the character. Mm-hmm. And as I start on the other side, watching more and observing what the reference that I had, I add more dimension and perspective into the pose of the character eventually, which helped a lot to improve, I think, the overall composition as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, and to build on that too, one of the things, for anyone who's tuning in, by the way, Nuria has a great breakdown of this project on her website, which we'll include in the show notes for everyone to check out. But you have on this, you know, project case study on your website, this great line, you know, as you're breaking this piece down, one thing that you mention in the process is that, you know, you were trying to find the right age for the character. So like, you knew obviously your nephew's age and everything, but to sort of relay that into the illustration itself, you know, could you walk us through like what the process was like for trying to like nail that sort of like specific like age and within the character development?
Yeah. So I think at the beginning I started with proportions that they were not quite accurate. And I think how you find the age is by the proportions of the head mostly. If it's like, if the head is quite big compared to the body, maybe it gives like even more of a baby sort of perspective, or sure, you pursue more like a baby. And then it was like, he's not a baby, he's like around at the time maybe 4 years old, so we kind of do that. And yeah, I was just trying to honestly see how the proportions work together, and it was a lot about testing and trying. Especially I really had to look at the reference to get it right, because sometimes for capturing something so specific as age, you sometimes need to look at something and you cannot just do it out of memory, because at least for me, memory is not my biggest skill. So I really should look at something if I'm trying to do something specific. And most of the time it was like about the proportion of the head compared to the hands and feet. And also the perspective, the photo I took of him was from a standing position, and he was kneeling down. So
interesting.
Also it was a bit tricky because the head had to be big from the perspective, but at the same time, don't make him look like a baby because he isn't. So yeah, it was a lot of proportion tweaking at the beginning until I found the right combination. I also kind of gave myself a bit of freedom to not necessarily do it exactly as the photograph, because the thing that's the wonder of illustration, you can take the reference as far as you want, but you can also take it to your own domain and do with it whatever you want and just be creative.
Yeah, no, well, and I love that you just sort of dived into the whole sort of proportion stuff, because, you know, I know we were just saying, you know, before we logged on here today that I, you know, I'm not an illustrator by background. And, you know, when I am able to, you know, speak with illustrators and talk with illustrators here on the podcast, you know, I'm always just like completely floored by like the work you guys do, because it's incredible how, you know, how you sort of convey the realism. And I would say like for your work, at least in my own opinion, you know, there is this sense of realism, even though there's like, you know, the whimsy and the playfulness and the vibrancy to it. Right. You know, and the proportions, I mean, yeah, absolutely. You know, make things feel more realistic. And so, yeah, you know, when you're talking about your nephew, I was just like, well, I'm not sure how old he is. So maybe that'll come up. And so now we know that he was 4. And yeah, like you can totally tell that this is not a toddler. This is not a teenager. This is like, you know, like a young kid. And the proportions totally, you know, tell that story and give off that character trait. So it's really cool to hear that, like, for you, you know, that's one of the things, I guess, maybe in your creative process, character development process, if you will, is really narrowing down the perspective of things, which is, it's really cool.
Yeah, sometimes it's important, especially for not just personal work, when you're aiming at portraying a certain age on your character. Also, for in commercial work, it's important to kind of experiment and find the right spot, because sometimes for some commercials, maybe they need to be over 18, and you know, you have to portray that. And so I guess like experimenting with proportions and references, and just keeping in mind that when you do character design for any type of work, it's quite important to figure out the age appropriate illustration that you need to do.
That's a great point. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, yeah, if you're skewing towards an older crowd and, you know, the proportions, you know, tell otherwise, like, yeah, it's kind of funny how the human eye can immediately pick up on that like something's off here and I can't exactly tell why, but like, you know, I'm sure, you know, someone like yourself or a creative could point that out right away, but like, you know, oh, like, you know, yeah, like the size of the head's just like, you know, not matching appropriately, or like, you know, the length of the torso, or you name it, you know. So that's really cool. It's really cool to see that was like one of the sort of traits that you were like narrowing in on for this piece. That's so awesome.
Yeah, I try to incorporate looking at my work, I think I incorporate a lot of child sort of like characters, just because I find that it's quite interesting to work with how creating different characters for them. And as I mentioned before, I find a lot of inspiration, childhood memories, and things that resonated with me back in the days of being a child, I suppose. But yeah, I like to see a lot of like books. Like one of the things I like to play with is not just proportions in terms of the scale of parts of a character, but also their interaction with objects. Like one of my inspirations as well was The Borrowers. I don't know if you know the movie.
I don't. Maybe it sounds familiar. I'm gonna have to look it up after this.
Well, I highly recommend it. It's quite an old movie where these old people, small people, sorry, they lived within the cracks or within the walls of this family house, and they will borrow things that they would need. And so you will see this tiny character with a giant needle or a giant bobbin of thread and things like that. And that was actually the inspiration, I think, if I'm not wrong, to Arrietty from Ghibli, which was also a tiny character compared to the human, and how the proportions of the elements around them make a contrast. And I quite like to play a lot with that in my works, and just do gigantic things and tiny characters and things like that.
That's a great point. You know, you don't think of it, you know, I think when people think of sort of contrast in terms of like sort of like design principles, you know, they're thinking like maybe color and scale, but like, you know, how the elements are sort of interacting with one another, that creates contrast too. So that's another great point about this piece too. And you can see it in this piece too, which you also touched upon, you know, how the elements kind of informed, you know, the pose of your nephew, and, you know, the story of this piece overall. You know, how did you know which elements would sort of complement, you know, I guess his story as like the protagonist in this piece?
Yeah, so I was imagining, besides it being my nephew, I kind of was imagining he like a different character of not just his personality, but a character's personality. He would be like an adventurer. He would be like going to find these creatures and investigate. So I was thinking, okay, what kind of things he could be carrying? A gigantic backpack with, well, he would need maybe some type of containers to collect this insects. So we'll add that. What if he's like in a dark environment? He will need like a source of light. In this case, I've kind of just added the glass jar with this glowing butterfly moth thing that's kind of lighting up the scene. So I was thinking about a lot of things, not just the technical aspect of how I'm going to position the character, but also what is the environment going to be like? Is it going to be daylight? Is it going to be night? Is it going to be more fun if it was nighttime and he was trying to go into this adventure, and the sort of elements he would be carrying? And just because, he's a child, and I like to play with kind of the proportions of things. Okay, a gigantic backpack is what he needs, and and then just kind of start adding things that sort of will make sense and create this sort of narrative that I'm after. And these were the sort of elements. And also snails, they would not be gigantic compared to him. So, but still, I kind of added this gigantic snail to the backpack just for fun. So imagining it not being a true realistic representation of reality necessarily. Maybe it was his mascot. So you kind of start adding this narration of okay, what it could be, what sort of things I can add, and then kind of build like a story of, so if you were to like write further about this character, you could certainly do a different composition using the same elements and build a further story of what it could be doing, be up to, or find interesting. So yeah, I think that's something that actually I found very beneficial from working in motion design, that just because I do an illustration that's not going to be moving, it doesn't necessarily mean that it cannot have more behind it. Even though it's not as a straightforward animation where everything's kind of morphing and moving and it makes sense. In an image, you can also build your own narrative, your own creative brief, and slowly build up from there. And yeah, just create that story behind the work.
I love that. You just mentioned so many great little gems in that segment there too. I loved how you talked about, you know, that you're creating this static imagery, you know, it's not for an animation piece necessarily, but you're thinking about how, you know, how can this one frame become a series of frames and tell an even larger story, and, you know, use the same elements to kind of guide the story along its path. I think that that is such a, that is something that, you know, even as an animator, motion designer myself, you know, that's something that, you know, I guess when, you know, creating style frames or, you know, just like static pieces like this, you know, that's something really important to remember, that, you know, how does the story continue? Can you get that sense of like anticipation out of it? And I think for this piece, you definitely do. I mean, you can see that, like, you know, you can interpret maybe what's going to happen next. So I love that you mentioned that. I also love that you talked about the enormous backpack, because, you know, I know you're saying, you know, like in terms of proportions, you're trying to, like, you know, create sort of some contrast with that as well. And I have to say, at least from my own experience as a kid, you know, there's a sense of realism with it too, because I don't know about you, but my backpack was always full of like bunch of books and God knows what else was in there too. So I was like, oh, the enormous backpack resonates.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I don't know how I don't have worse back problems from all the things I would carry as a kid. But yeah, I guess it's realistic in a way. Yeah. I tried to make it like, okay, how far should I take it? If I put the backpack being bigger than him, it would probably just catch too much attention. And be like distracting from the character, right? So that's also important to notice when you're illustrating, of how much protagonism do you want to give to certain things without distracting from the main point. Actually, when I was like just illustrating this, you know, sometimes you have to watch, at least for me, I have to watch over what I'm doing, because I will try to, you know, the hardest part of illustration, it's sometimes the hands and gesture. Mm. And I could find myself that on the first sketches, I was hiding the hand behind a snail. I was like, oh, I'm trying to make it easy for myself. I have to watch out. And kind of then I kind of changed it. I took reference photos of me and kind of pulled the hand out from behind the snail and show it like holding this tiny glowing ball. Which is what turned out in the end. But yeah, it's kind of like adding realism, seeing what needs to be the main focal point, and also trying to see where you're trying to cut corners, because sometimes it can happen, and with hands, it happens to me quite a lot.
I was gonna say hands, you know, like I feel like that's like the double-edged sword in design and animation. Like, don't really want to design them. Definitely don't want to animate them. It's a lot going on there. But no, it's I love that, you know, there is a subtlety to them that, you know, the one is kind of obscured in his pose. And then the other one's, you know, holding up this source of light, which just to touch upon really briefly too, I love how in your compositions, you're using sort of like very crisp vector sort of lines and like geometry, and then also using this like just beautiful rasterize, either like, you know, sense of depth or light. It blends so beautifully together. I feel like that's maybe a trademark of like your work, but you know, I've seen it. I feel like I see it in other pieces of yours as well.
Yeah, I like to, at the beginning I wasn't using vector lines, I was using doing everything in Photoshop, but then I realized that I was complicating my life by going that way, and if I'm going to do line work, let's do it first vector and then continue in Photoshop. So yeah, that's my now workflow. I do the outlines in vectors and then I just move into Photoshop. And that's how I just play around. I mean, I kind of have a workflow how I like to do things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I know exactly how it's going to play out when I start an illustration. Sometimes it's a lot of testing, a lot of color variation. As you can see, I did like at least 6 tries or more with this one, trying to figure out the colors. And I kind of like to create this rough first try of a color script, saying it like that, which I like to do with my own illustrations, but I also like to do it when I have to work in motion design, because it gives this more cohesive understanding to the entire animation. And when I'm doing illustration, it just lays out making the more difficult decisions at the beginning and being able to just explore once I've found something that works as well.
Yeah. No. Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah. Talk to me a little bit more about, you know, how you're approaching color here. Cause yeah, you have these color explorations, you know. Are you trying to figure out the color very early on, like after you've done the line work? Or are you thinking about the color as you're doing the line work? Like what's informing your color decisions?
Yeah. So I like to concentrate on one thing at a time. I don't like to think about color when I'm trying to figure out the proportions and things, because I think that I would get distracted and go too far ahead too early and probably forget something that I was meant to do or incorporate. So I think once I'm happy with the sketch, the rough sketch, I just paint on top of it and don't try to be too careful about it, because otherwise I'm just like maybe not utilizing the time the best I could. I just want to put some color in there, see how it works. If it doesn't work, great. No big issue. Let's move on and just testing and testing. And I will start with like, okay, a color palette, but I never 100% said, okay, this is how it's going to be. I always leave room to changing it up as I go. And sometimes they work or they don't work until the very end, and then I change it and then I'm happy. But roughly, I will do like at least minimum 3 tries of different colors, select one, move on, block the shapes and see if it works at a higher resolution. Because when you start adding details to it, you start having more ideas. You've been like boiling the idea in your head for longer. So you kind of have a more, I find that I get more intuitions as the further I'm working on something rather than trying to make it really fast very soon.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, the more natural the process can be, the better, you know. You don't have to get super, like you said, you know, you don't have to be like super constrained with like, you know, timeline or colors or, you know, detail. You know, whatever is working works, and you know, like you were talking about earlier, kind of like then informs even more of the composition. So that's really cool to hear, especially, you know, with personal pieces too. I'm not sure how others approach personal pieces, but I feel like I do similar with more like, you know, more design focused stuff, that like I have an idea, but then, you know, either I subtract or add in something, and that kind of takes things in different directions. So again, another very natural, organic type of process, which it sounds like, you know, that was the case here as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a process different for everyone. It's not for the sure. same when you're working on a personal piece compared to commercial work. Commercial work, you are restrained by certain things like time, and you're not able to spend as much time as you want. But I think that's what you can do if you create a lot of personal work that can just really help you to narrow down your process and be able to get to that final result much faster, which also influence what you get to do in commercial work and animation. But yeah, I also like color also tells a story. Like controlling the detail and the narrative, you also have to think about how color can influence the story in one way or another. Maybe if you're trying to make something glow and illuminate the way, maybe it needs to be a dark scenery. So mm-hmm. to be able to give that atmospheric feeling. And so those certain elements are also a part of the narrative. And that's why some of the options that I played with wasn't working well for me, because it was like you weren't sure whether it was daylight, nighttime. It was maybe too not specific, and that was distracting from the story. And then I went for a quiet, darker color selection that added up to enhance what I was trying to convey in the image. So
yeah, it's amazing how that color contrast really adds like another layer of depth and another layer to the storytelling of the whole composition too. That's a great point. Well, and looking at some of the other elements that you've, you know, shared today too, you know, you have this really cool time lapse of like how that initial sketch came out. So I'm just curious, in terms of your creative process, you know, where do you start? Do you start out on the iPad, like kind of sketching? Are you in something like Procreate and then bringing stuff into Illustrator, Photoshop, etc.? Or are you doing a lot of it on the iPad?
So I would most of the time use the iPad because I like to sketch really comfortably on my sofa if I can. And just kind of space out of the real time and have fun trying to come up with something. But I can also, sometimes I would also sketch directly in Photoshop. But the good thing about, I guess, having using Procreate is being able to have the recordings afterwards and see how you change things around, which is also really useful to see how you improve from the first idea to the final one and get that file where you're able to see it yourself. But yeah, I would normally start in Procreate and then move on to Photoshop and creating the outlines in Illustrator as well. And I will start like with really loose lines. I don't try to make it too specific just yet, just getting the rough idea of how the position of the character is going to be, how central in the illustration, sort of thinking about the composition, the focal point, what's going to be the most, what I want you to look at in the image. And then roughly refine it slowly until I get to something that I think it's good enough to continue forward. But I think it's always good to see it at a small scale as well, not to get too zooming into the illustration either, and just figure out the very rough idea that you're trying to portray first. Just like emotion design, where you're trying to, I don't know, have do as the storyboards. You're just trying to get the main thing on the page, and then slowly figure it out in more detail as you go. But I think it's exactly the same idea. Just in one frame, I guess. Yeah. You can be as much detail as you want. You don't have to think too much about movement just yet.
Right. Well, and I love what you were talking about too, both in terms of like how, you know, you start it maybe with a little thumbnail and then you do like sort of like the basic sketch off of that. And those for the most part are, you know, yeah, just sort of figuring out what the focal point is with, you know, where basic shapes are kind of like filling in. That's something that Tristan, who was on the show earlier this year, also talked about as well. And it's something that, you know, again, I'm not an illustrator by background, but when approaching, you know, more animation, motion design type projects, you know, I'm kind of wondering for myself now if it's really a good idea for me to do that too. Like, you know, yeah, storyboards, super important because you're obviously laying out the framework for the rest of the animated production. But just figuring out the sort of the thumbnail sketch phase, you know, I think I'm realizing like maybe that's a step in the process I might need to add for myself, because you can get kind of overwhelmed like jumping right into Photoshop or like even just a normal like sketch, like normal size sketch pad with like using the whole page, you know. I think maybe taking stuff to that smaller scale so that you really focus on what the focus of the frame is a really beneficial step in the process that I think I myself am overlooking. So, you know, learning something from you guys as I'm doing this podcast too.
Yeah, no, I think it's so beneficial. Like, I guess it's great to just start simple, getting the main idea. But when it's like, for example, when I'm working in motion design and I have to take a storyboard frame and then make it happen into an illustration, I was always try to polish the illustration first before taking it into final rendered color, just so that I'm very familiar with the frame, or maybe I can suggest further things that could be added to it, because that's also part of the process of, you know, using your own voice and ideas to maybe suggest something that maybe the team didn't think about, or it could add more to the story, or especially when you're like working on animations that are very story driven with characters and scenery and things like that. I find really important to take that rough thumbnail and then trying to make it into something that you can add a bit of your voice to, but be cohesive with the team and the style, direction, things like that. But yeah, that's what I would normally do either way for my personal work or working in animation with a team.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. Like, I know that you've done some work with Ordinary Folk, and they do quite a combination of like, you know, very, very illustrative pieces, but then also, you know, maybe more geometric based type, you know, just like purely motion design pieces, you know, and knowing that, you know, you prefer more of these sort of like character driven, nostalgic driven types of pieces. Like how does the process differ, or is it similar to like, you know, more maybe design based type of projects? Is it, you know, what does it look like for you on those types of projects?
It's very different. I think earlier in my career, I was doing more of the abstract sort of animations where you don't use characters, you just have to do the story through geometry and shapes. And to be honest, that was a really great exercise early on because it really challenged you to be able to tell a story without expressions, without hands, without characters. So it's a very different approach, in my opinion, compared to having to add characters and having to add different imagery in the background and things like that. I think both are great forms of animation, and I think they feed a purpose, particularly for certain type of projects. But I generally, as I've been working in the motion industry and developing also my own artistic voice, I found that I get to express quite a lot when I get to do characters, that I get to do backgrounds and things like that. I think it's because I draw a lot of personal inspiration from not just movies, anime, even comics and things like that. So yeah, I think it's a different process. I've learned quite a lot about reflection, light, movement through working on those more geometric type of projects. which I really loved. I really enjoyed working with the teams. Ordinary folks are amazing, and I really enjoy working with them. So that experience was really valuable for me because it has added up to not just like the commercial work, but also what I want to be doing and how it has influenced my work, how it has taught me to play a lot with dimension, movement, reflections. And I've incorporated that in a different way, but learned from it into my personal work in one way or another. So,
yeah, I feel like I can see that, you know, I don't know if I've seen like earlier work before, you know, you've done maybe some of these collaborations with studios and stuff, but hearing you say that, I feel like I can see it in your work, like some of your more recent pieces too, because again, yeah, it's just this beautiful dichotomy of like, you know, lighting and like, you know, how you show depth with like, you know, sort of like, you know, blurs and stuff like that, but then also like beautiful highlights and shadows on characters and the various elements and compositions. So I wish I could think of a word that like perfectly like encapsulates it. I think that's the word. I don't know English today. But you've got such a distinct style and tone and look in your stuff, and it's really cool. It's beautiful. It's unlike stuff that I've seen before. Thank you. To hear that prior experiences, how you've taken your career kind of like funnels into like even more client work and your personal work. So it's really cool to see that evolution as well.
Yeah, I have to say, like before, when I was a junior motion designer, I got to experiment a lot with 3D, which also was a really great experience and practice, because it helps you to figure out on the page how the elements should be or are going to be seen, or you want them to be seen. And it's just been like a mix of things. I think like this journey of trying not just motion design, but I started illustration because I wanted my animations to look better. So it was like trying to fix one thing with learning another thing. And then eventually became what I enjoyed mostly doing, I guess, because I was more always interested into the design aspect of things. So it was quite natural for me. But I really tried to learn it as much as I could early on and just take any opportunity of a project to be like, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I improve it, make something cool with it? And also like from working in the motion industry, you get to the great part is that you get to collaborate, and from collaboration and working with other designers and animators, you learn so much. It's really valuable because sometimes you have to follow certain artistic direction that's been set for a project, and that's also really a great exercise. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've been really fortunate to work with some amazing designers that was like just looking after them and being like, oh my god, I can't believe I'm working with you.
Yeah.
I've been like, oh my god, so enthusiastic. And yeah, it's been great to be able to learn from others, but through this journey so far.
That's
and
awesome.
Also pull from different sources of 3D, motion design, adding movement into a still image. And I like to mix it up as much as I can.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what I enjoy about this industry too a whole lot, is that, you know, if you start out in one area, you can totally end up pivoting hard in a completely different direction, but they all like kind of like mush together. Like, you know, you do a little bit of 2D, you can do a little bit of 3D, you can do like really sort of cinematic photographic realism types of things too. And but then, you know, yeah, like from like an illustrative sense, you can kind of like really kind of take that full picture and like inject that into an illustration. So it's a whole lot of fun. I can't recommend motion design enough, because it is a whole lot of fun for that reason. That's very great points, and really cool to hear, you know, how everything's kind of like morphed together over the years for you as well. What would you say were the biggest challenges and or rewards about working on this illustrative piece?
Right. Interesting question. The biggest challenge, I think, it was to add narrative to it, to do something meaningful. I think sometimes you can draw something, but it doesn't necessarily carry a narrative behind it, for at least for the artist. Maybe people doesn't see it, but at least for you, that, so trying to make it mean something, I think, is something that I've been trying to work extra on my illustrations. That's been the challenge for me, I suppose, and the biggest reward. It probably was to be able to create something that resonated with me closely. So it was not something random that doesn't necessarily carry a story that connects with me. I think through the personal work, I'm trying to look in myself, things around me, and trying to see how I can do something that represents me in a way. Because at the beginning in the career, which is totally normal, you try to look a lot of source of inspiration from the internet, your feed, other artists and things like that. And I become to a point where I just want to look into what it's here and see how I can express it through everything I've learned over the years with motion design, design, illustration. So I think it's been, I guess, the challenge is make it mean something that comes from me. And also being the challenge, also the reward, I suppose.
I was going to say, at first it sounded like, I was like, oh, it sounds like it's the reward and the challenge, which is great. But no, I love that. I love it. I feel very similarly, gosh, I really can't talk today, about pieces. You know, like you said, I feel like early on as a motion designer, maybe focusing a bit more on the design end. Yeah, I was pulling inspiration from artists and people and industry professionals that I really looked up to. But really, at the end of the day, the things that were moving me the most were the personal stories, that like personal things I was experiencing, and figuring out a way to sort of get that onto a canvas. And I could not agree more with you there. So I can see why that could be both a challenge and a reward of this project as well.
Yeah. I mean, when you are your own client, it's the toughest.
Yes. That's so true. That is so true. We are our own toughest clients. We're going to have to like make stickers or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm a terrible client. No. I just try, you know, you want to find, I guess, like when you get to a point, you want to find your own artistic voice and have something to say. And, I mean, may not be meaningful to others, but it's to you. And it was, I think that's what matters. It adds to the fire of why you want to keep doing what you do and why you love doing it, exactly, through these personal pieces. And yeah, just great to be able to share the process as well. And hopefully someone find it interesting. Sometimes my process is a bit chaotic. So it's actually been good to kind of look at it and say, okay, what is that I tend to do? How do I do it? How do I approach things? And slowly I figure out, okay, this is my pattern of how I work, how my mind works. And it becomes more comfortable with time, not knowing how it's going to turn up, and just be comfortable with feeling uncomfortable.
Absolutely. That's something that came up in our episode with Grace too. But I love what you just said though, that, you know, like you want to create a meaningful piece, but there's meaning behind the intention and the process too, like, and recognizing like, oh, okay, this is my process. There's like some comfort in that, you know, I would say, like, not only just in the end results, but in how the end results are being approached. So that's really cool to hear. I love that. Thank you for sharing that, Maria.
Yeah, no, it's really that to me. I guess I would, finding your process, some people could think it's finding your own style, but mm-hmm. I also feel like there should always be room for exploring, even though if you tend to do things exact same way, I always try to do something I haven't done before. For example, I want to do a lot more scenery and landscapes, because I feel like I've done quite a lot of characters nowadays. So yeah, just finding your way of keep learning and growing and getting better with time.
So well said.
Yeah, that's a. I have so many things to do. My list is incredibly long.
My to-do list is ceiling to floor at this point.
Yeah, that's good. We never get bored. We always have something to do.
That is very true. That is very true. You know, you can't get bored in this industry. That's for certain. Well, the question that I almost asked earlier that I wanted to leave for the end is the question I always have to ask at the end of each episode. But, you know, what about this piece or this frame, you know, makes it your favorite frame?
Family. I think I'm just going to leave it like that. I don't know. Yeah, it just it makes it special because it's family and also represents something meaningful to me.
I love that.
I guess. Yeah.
Very, very succinct answer. I love that. Well, this has been like the biggest pleasure, Nuria. Thank you so much for sharing this frame and project with us today. It's been really cool to get like some insight and a look into your creative process and how you approach all of your projects. If people want to connect with you to learn more about what you're working on, what is the best way for them to do so?
Right. So if you want to connect with me, you can visit my website at nuriaboch.co.uk or my Instagram page at nuriabochn. And yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity here.
Oh, my pleasure. No, this is great. Thank you so much. We'll make sure to share your information, links, and some of the resources we mentioned here for our audience to check out in the show notes as well. But that wraps it up for today, everyone. Feel free to email us at styleframesatpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions. If you like what you see and hear here, don't forget to subscribe, like, share, and review the show on your favorite podcasting platforms as well. And lastly, come connect with us on social. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it these days, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you again, Nuria, for joining us today, and we'll see you all in the next one.